Welcome to your industry's information stream. Focus.
Focus was a webinar series set up for just a short half an hour scenario to update the industry on what has happened in the last month and what's happening in the following month. Short, concise information can be digested very quickly. And I think that would that helps the industry out immensely. So without further ado, I'd like to hand over to our first presenters, Stephen Asimo and Michael McQueen from Media Super, to give us an update on the Media Super situation.
Thank you, Walter. Now, just to introduce myself, my name is Stephen Asimo and I work on the executive team of Media Super, managing a lot of our face-to-face contact with members, employers, and our industry partners and stakeholders, including the Print and Visual Communications Association. Michael McQueen's our Chief Investment Officer, and effectively we're here today to talk about our impending merger with Cbus, what that means as far as our presence within the industry and what that means from an investment point of view as well, and also to talk a little bit about how Media Super is performing at the moment. To give a very quick background, Media Super represents the print entertainment arts industries, and we've been doing so for the better part of 30 years. We are a $7 billion superannuation fund, and we're operating in an environment where there is a lot of pressure on superannuation funds to get bigger, to make sure that there are economies of scale, to make sure that the investment outcomes are better for members. And accordingly, we made a decision as a fund in late 2019 to pursue merger opportunities. And in doing so, we have now gone through the process of trying to merge Media Super into Cbus. And I will talk a little bit after handing over to Michael about what that actually means as far as Media Super's representation for or and to the print industry. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Michael to talk about the wonderful world of investments.
Welcome everyone. My name is Michael McQueen. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Media Super, and I'm essentially tasked with managing retirement savings over the medium to long term, in line with our members' best financial interest duty, which is a new duty that was applied to all super funds last year as regulation increased and strengthened. So the way that we manage our portfolio at Media Super is that we construct diversified portfolios, what I like to call all-weather portfolios, so our members can be comfortable their retirement savings are in safe hands and not sort of overexposed or underexposed or carrying too much risk at any given point in time. So what that means is that we invest in typical assets such as shares and bonds and cash, but also tangible or real assets like property and infrastructure as well. Given that we've just into the month of February in 2022, we can look back on the 2021 financial year. It was a really good year, in all honesty, for financial markets and people who hold real assets, with the local S&P ASX 200 share market returning 17%, factoring in dividends. So another very strong year after the calendar year of 2020. What that means for most of our members who are invested in the balanced MySuper option is a return of 12.91% for the 12 months ending 31st of December 2021. Whilst that's a fantastic return for a diversified portfolio over 1 year, yeah, superannuation is really a long-term strategy. And to that end, over the last 5 years, the balanced MySuper option has returned 8.78% per annum. And over the last 10 years, it's returned 9.31% per annum. Both of those returns over 5 and 10 years are above the median, which is a way of industry super parlance saying above the average or the peer fund. So we're really adding value there compared to other investment teams and other managers, which is fantastic. Going forward, obviously that's going to change. We'll be merging with Cbus. What that means from a practical point of view is that Media Super members will be investing in a bigger pool of investments and assets. That pool comprises the Media Super pool of assets and the Cbus pool of assets as well. I just want to make sure everyone's completely aware of the fact that Cbus actually have an excellent history of investment returns. Their performance has been very, very good. They've been in the top 10 performing funds over the long term, over 10, 15 year timeframes. And their short-term performance has been very strong as well. And that was the key pillar when we were doing due diligence on potential merger partners, was making sure that we were partnering with a fund that's got a track record of fantastic investment performance. One of the benefits of the merger will be that members are able to access markets, especially emerging markets, and more niche or specialised investment strategies that they don't currently have access to within the media super pool. So with that scale, with that bigger pool of assets and bigger investment team at Cbus, which will be looking after your retirement savings, it also comes with more active style of management and the ability to invest in strategies and in areas that smaller funds or mid-sized funds like Media Super traditionally aren't able to. So there's going to be an increase in diversification there as well as our members transfer into Cbus. So it's a really good news story from an investment perspective. And I'm being quite selfish because that's what I'm interested in on a day-to-day basis. So for me, at least, it gives me a lot of confidence that we're handing over people's retirement savings to a really strong fiduciary, which is Cbus. So with that, I might just hand back to Stephen.
Thanks, Michael. So I wanted to give a little bit of perspective on the merger with Cbus and why Cbus is an ideal partner for MediaSuper. Michael spoke about the investment performance as being a key criteria and how we measured it. Paramount to MediaSuper's decision on who we found as a merger partner is the outcomes for effectively our members. You know, is it going to result in better retirement outcomes for our members? And ultimately, that is going to be the case with Cbus. But one of the other determinants for why we chose Cbus is the fact that there was a proposition put forward that MediaSuper would continue to exist as a brand representing the industries that we've come to build such an affinity with over the years. You know, we have at the moment the PVCA occupying three seats on the MediaSuper board, representing industry and making decisions for the fund based on how the industry operates. So what we've done over the years is make sure that we have a really strong partnership with the likes of PVCA so that we can, you know, recognize industry, we can support the distribution of awards, support professional excellence. In partnering with an organization like Cbus, they were very much like-minded in the way that they approach their engagement with industry. And that's something that is slated to continue. Now, in saying all of that, whilst it's slated to continue, there is still, as there is with MediaSuper now, an imperative to make sure that how Cbus, the new trustee, is spending its money is in the members' best financial interest. So as long as we are connected to this industry and the industry is generating, you know, returns for members, and that means that we have contributions coming in through the print industry, it means we've got presence through the print and visual communications associations, there would be a continuation of MediaSuper. You know, being so close to industry, it means that we've been on site talking to our employers or businesses who contribute to MediaSuper, talking to members, and there's no reason that that is going to cease. There might be different channels through which people get access to various bits of information, but importantly, in many instances, there's going to be more channels through which people can access various parts of information. So it is really a positive thing, and we are really quite excited about how it's going to progress. Finally, you know, whilst PVCA represent MediaSuper or the industry interests on MediaSuper's board, that board position won't exist, but there will be an advisory committee set up to instruct Cbus on what's happening and what's relevant to industry to make sure that that presence still exists. And it's really key because the easy thing would be to find a larger fund to merge into and MediaSuper would cease to exist and you wouldn't have the presence and the input of the likes of Walter and Peter who are instructing the superannuation fund on what's important to industry. So in a nutshell, that's where we're heading. We're very excited about it. We're working through some of the service strategies that are going to exist at the moment, and we'll be communicating through the PVCA to our businesses that we interact with directly in the coming weeks and to our members on what some of the changes that are coming up that people should expect. So in the interest of keeping this brief, like you suggested, Walter, I'll leave it there. And if anyone does have any questions, please ask.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Michael. If there's any questions, just pop them in the chat and they can answer them via that. If there are no questions, thank you, Michael and Stephen, for that update. It's great to see that Media Super is there behind the industry and supporting the industry in all the ways it goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. And Grant, I noticed your comment. Absolutely. It is part of the idea that Media Super maintains that that personalised service will be maintained as well. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you. So Michael and Stephen will be leaving us now. They've got a bit of work to be done in the background, not just on the merger, but some of their day-to-day work is pretty important to them. At this point, I might just introduce you to Craig Brown. Craig is the MD of Sappy Trading, and Craig's come along to, and offered us a bit of his valuable time today to talk to us about some issues impacting pulp and paper prices and a few of the supply chain issues that we can expect to see around our imports. Over to you, Craig.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks, Walter. Afternoon, all. I know some of you haven't had the chance of meeting, but had a background in the paper industry now for 30 plus years, formerly on the merchant side. Some of you guys would know me as BJ Ball and Ball and Doggett CEO, and more recently on the supplier side. I am a Kiwi by birth, and I moved over here about 15 years ago, so I've got a bit of a trans-Tasman sort of a view on things too, and equally I think they're doing it pretty tough with COVID across the ditch as well. But look, just an opening comment, you know, I guess in the 30 plus years I've been involved, I don't think I've seen a more challenging time for printers, for distributors, for paper mills. You know, the whole supply chain is very much disrupted. It's unprecedented what we're seeing. There's a number of issues that are, I guess, causing inflationary pressures as well as logistics challenges. I probably don't have to tell you guys about the potential delays with shipping and the cost inflation and all of that that's going on at the moment. But I just thought I'd step through a little bit of the background there as best I can and give my opinion on some of that. I mean, for starters, if you look at the freight dynamic, it's, freight companies have put their prices up to unprecedented levels. Some of you might be aware of, some of the numbers these shipping companies are writing at the moment. It's quite extraordinary, but they certainly have a rite of passage to themselves, unfortunately, and they are absolutely milking it, in my opinion. In saying that, it's pushed freight prices up. If you're on the open market, I'm going to say freight prices are five times what they used to be, 18 months, 2 years ago. If you're a contracted customer, they're at least treble, probably four times, and from what I can tell, there's no sign of them coming off anytime soon, and that's probably the immediate concern for all of us. So I can't see any looming change this calendar year. I think you've still got a supply demand situation that is out of whack. There's more demand than there is supply. There's empty container issues. There's port slowdowns. There's multiple reasons for many big companies to be paying a premium on their freight and keep, freight prices artificially high, because in my opinion, they are artificially high, and at some point they do have to come down. In saying that, it's not just the price factor, it's the reliability. We're now in a situation, particularly in Australia, New Zealand is worse, by the way, where once something is on a boat, it can become a little bit of a lottery as to whether it gets offloaded in a port, in some cases an unscheduled stop, and cargo can go missing for weeks. And that's something that, unfortunately, not just our industry, many industries are really struggling to control. So reliability is another major issue. Lead times now out of a lot of countries have blown out by multiple months. And, unfortunately, I just don't see any sign of that changing this calendar year. Probably the other thing that's having a major impact at the moment is just the inflationary pressures all around. You've got raw material costs going through the roof. I think every supplier across every industry is facing price hikes, be it by their own suppliers, be it by knock-on effects of freight, or even the cost of COVID. You know, so there's just multiple factors going on that are pushing prices up. I guess my personal view on that is it's probably here to stay this calendar year. I just don't see any sign of that easing. In saying that, I think it will ease at some point. You know, what goes up has to come down. You know, and some of that might be around the supply-demand balance coming back into some sort of equilibrium, you know, because that's also the other factor, particularly around raw materials at the moment. You've got more demand than you've got supply. When it comes to paper manufacturing, there's been a lot of capacity taken out over the last few years, you know, literally millions of tons globally. You know, that was done, that was planned probably at least 5 years ago, 10 years ago in some cases, very much necessary in a declining market. But I think what's caught everyone off guard is the COVID bounce that's happening overseas. So in the likes of Europe, some Asian markets, certainly the USA, supply has outstripped demand. There is a shortage, a crucial shortage of certain grades. To give you an example, I know the newsprint market has hit its own crisis where, you know, many years ago, a lot of manufacturers stopped making newsprint, which they had to do. They had to convert machinery across. Well, there's been a bit of a bounce back, and you know, now you can't get hold of newsprint. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of factors in behind that make the buying of paper and the buying of raw material very challenging in that sense. You know, the other thing that's starting to have a knock-on impact that we're starting to see is the high cost of energy. I think some of that's related to the fact that everyone's got out of coal. I don't really know of too many paper mills using coal-fired power anymore. They're reliant on gas, or they're reliant on, you know, a lot of markets moving towards green energy solutions. And of course, that comes at a price. So there's inflationary pressures on that. So if you add all of that up, I think it really means that we've probably got more of what we've seen this calendar year. Can't see any reason for that to change, unfortunately. But, you know, over time, I would certainly anticipate, you know, that, as I said, what goes up would have to come down. A lot of the concern for all of us is, you know, what does this do to our industry? Does it speed up a decline? Does it make us a smaller industry? I would say ultimately, yes, it probably does. I would think that there is an element of that where some customers are going to say, look, this is getting expensive, it's getting problematic to try and get paper or to try and get print on time, particularly in the web space or in the newsprint space or whatever. It does force people into making some decisions for change, but I think unfortunately that is going to be what it's going to be. And you know, ultimately every business now is having to do what they need to do to survive, to hang in there and to try and make for, you know, some sort of a sustainable industry. You know, if you, people ask me, and they often do, are people milking this? Are they profiteering? If we're talking about shipping companies, I think it's very obvious that they are. If you're talking about, you know, paper mills, printers, paper merchants, I don't think you have to go too far to look at their results to see that people are struggling. They're not profiteering. So it's about survival. You know, and I guess from a supplier point of view, everyone is trying to smooth out what they can, but all these costs ultimately have to be shared and passed on in the main, otherwise it just ultimately doesn't make sense for a lot of manufacturers.
Craig, just on to pick up a couple of points that you've raised there. Firstly, you mentioned profiteering, and I wonder, is there a role at all for the ACCC in some aspect of curtailing that profiteering, or is it just too big and outside their scope?
Look, I'd say, Kieran, it's outside their scope. And look, the only thing they could really look at would be the shipping companies. You know, those companies are global. They do what they need to do, I suppose. if you're talking locally, I don't know where you'd go, because then, you know, I certainly wouldn't be suggesting there's any of that going on, to be honest. Yeah. Having sort of lived on a couple of sides of the fence.
Yeah. So, and I guess really, even if there was a role for the ACCC, we probably wouldn't see any action from them for 2 years. Would that be a fair comment?
I haven't been down that path, Kieran, unfortunately.
Right. And the other thing that I see came out of that was, you know, we talked about the increasing cost. You talked about downsizing industry. You know, and clearly that's going to impact printers on the front line. The traditionally printers have been price takers.
Mm.
What would be your advice to a smaller printer or even a large printer who's faced with massive increases in substrate costs? How do they go about selling that, the need to persist to a doubting digital media savvy market?
Kieran, look, you guys know far better than me, but look, to echo some of what you guys have said and what you've said over the last couple of years, you've got to show the value. You know? You've got to show that print, you know, is tactile, it does have a response, it does work. You know, it works in a market up against a digital environment that's still somewhat unproven.
Yeah.
I believe in print personally as a consumer. I think it does connect you. I think we've all got to find those ways of showing that and demonstrate it as best we can. You know, from a transparency point of view, I think, you know, get as much information, industry information as you can about what's going on. It's we're not the only industry facing all these massive hikes and challenges at the moment. It's pretty broad.
Beautiful. Walter, have you got something to contribute in that area or...?
No, I think Craig has sort of wrapped it up very nicely with, we know that the shipping companies are profiteering immensely out of this. I think if the suppliers to the industry and the industry itself can work together to weather through this period, it won't last forever. I think the shipping companies will be pulled in line at some stage and the supply and demand will turn around. So it's just a case of, you know, hurry up and wait. But I think if the industry and suppliers can work together, we can get through this.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yep, agree. Good comment.
All right, that's a pretty valuable contribution, Craig. And thank you very much for your time on that and your insights.
You're welcome. Happy to help where I can. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've no doubt there'll be some more questions from the industry in time.
Yep.
And we'll certainly come back to you with those questions if you're happy enough to add a bit more insight for us.
I'll absolutely do my best. I don't have all the answers, but certainly happy to give an opinion as best I can. Eh?
Exactly, Craig. Thank you very much, and your time is valuable.
You're welcome.
Right, and at this stage now, we'll move on to our next guest, Jack Burns from PVCA's HR Advisory Service. Jack's going to give us a bit of a backgrounder on current employment issues in the visual communication sector, and I'll throw it over to him for his insights and a few highlights.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Kieran. Appreciate the invite to today's session. I think it's a really fantastic initiative that the PVCA have come up with, and are glad to be a part of it. So I am aware of time, so I'll keep it short and sharp, because there is one really major contemporary issue affecting not just visual communications, but across the board, but it very much is affecting employers in the visual communications industry, because we're speaking to employers about it nearly every single day. And that's managing this current phase of the pandemic that we're in at the moment, with the Omicron variant, you know, running wild and case numbers dropping slightly at the moment, but they've been very high, of course, through January, and we imagine they'll remain pretty high in February as well. So what that means is that workplaces are dealing with staff shortages at a much more frequent rate than all previous phases of the pandemic, when case numbers weren't nearly as high. So obviously that causes disruption, and that's what members are phoning us about. in terms of how to manage these staff absences that are directly related to this current phase of the pandemic and high case numbers. So some of the key issues that we're advising members on at this stage are managing leave entitlements. So when a staff member either contracts COVID-19 or has to go into forced isolation because they've been deemed a close contact, how do you manage their leave entitlements? How do you manage, you know, their paying conditions during that period when they're off work? What it also does, what this, you know, this current phase of the pandemic where case numbers are very high and there is a very real possibility of, you know, staff members becoming infected with COVID-19, what it also does is it really brings the work health and safety or the occupational health and safety systems and processes into focus. So all organisations in Australia, all businesses have a legal obligation under health and safety laws to ensure a safe workplace. So it's really, really important to be regularly reviewing your systems and processes when it comes to safety to ensure that you are fulfilling your work health and safety or your occupational health and safety obligations, to do everything reasonably practicable to keep everybody in the workplace safe. So, you know, that involves regularly doing risk assessments of the workplace, making sure you've got safety, good safety measures in place, such as, you know, social distancing, mask wearing, if applicable, if necessary, social distancing, having good access to hygiene facilities and all that sort of stuff. So they're really the major current issues affecting employers in the visual communications industry at the moment. And I imagine that will continue certainly into February. As I said, case numbers, as we've seen, are slowly dropping in certain parts of the country, but we do imagine that will continue to be the major focus heading into February and possibly even into March. So, again, it's a new phase of the pandemic. You know, issues in 2021 were, again, mostly directly related to the COVID-19 pandemic, but mostly around the management of lockdowns and stuff like that, and how to manage staff through lockdowns and other sort of scenarios like that. But at the moment, it's all about managing the day-to-day disruptions caused by staff absences. So that's really where we're sitting at the moment in terms of the advice we are providing to members of the PVCA.
Thanks, Jack. Is it still a case that there's a lot of confusion out there between what's in force in each of the individual jurisdictions?
Yeah, look, I think there's been some degree of consistency agreed upon recently, particularly around sort of isolation requirements. I believe I think there was a national sort of agreement in terms of what the isolation requirements are, but it is correct that different states and territories still have different rules in some aspects. Largely though, when it comes to the employment relations advice, like around managing leave entitlements, it does remain largely consistent throughout the different states and territories because it's all based on national employment legislation. But there can be some differences in sort of work health and safety laws, occupational health and safety. So there are some subtle differences that do apply.
So, Walter, you've been talking to government ministers and bureaucrats, I understand, around that need for consistency. What are they telling you?
They're depending on which state you talk to, there's always that big blame game happening across the states into the federal environment. But I think at the end of the day, most of them are on the same page. I think if we exclude WA at this point in time, but I think most of Australia is on the same page, and they're all sort of looking forward to say that, you know, we're going to have to live with this virus long term. Yes, there may be a few more strains coming out, but we just need to be ready and working with that so that we can ensure that the economy stays somewhat intact and can continue through it. I think the bigger challenge that we're going to have as an industry and industries and all up is the immigration coming in and how we deal with the visas and that sort of thing from an employment point of view, because that's really what we need and what's lacking moving forward.
Yeah, thanks, Walter. All right, Jack, thank you very much. Appreciate your input and your insights. We're getting a little bit short on time if we were to finish at 3 o'clock. I'd just like to quickly touch on a couple of issues that are on the compliance front. First, I want to just remind people in the industry around superannuation guarantee liabilities and PAYG and GST liabilities. One of the big messages that I have from the tax office is, yes, they're happy enough to help people through the tough times, but they can't help if they don't know what the position is. Their hands are somewhat tied with superannuation as it's covered by specific legislation. However, where they can help, they will, and you can organise that through a registered BAS agent or a registered tax agent. So I want to flag the director identification number requirement, which has been imposed upon us. Members and other industry participants, company directors may be aware that by November this year, every company director must be registered and have an identification number. Our advice is get in sooner rather than later. And secondly, that the process is not particularly onerous, provided you have your identification documents sorted out. And I guess really that's probably enough for us today. Walter, can I just throw back to you to quickly sum up before we sign off?
Firstly, I'd just like to thank everyone for joining us today. The Focus monthly event will be the first Tuesday of each month at the same time. I think it's a very important platform for the industry to sort of sit around. And if there's anything that anyone here would like to have discussed in future forums, just drop us an email and we can facilitate that to happen, whether it be a certain supplier, whether it be, you know, government relations issues, whatever it may be. I think that we can bring all this information to the forefront, which then helps people digest it better and make better decisions going forward. So without further ado, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today and have a great afternoon.
And just a quick reminder that this session has been recorded and will be available. Links will be available through the PVCR website shortly. And please feel free to share those links on social media and with your colleagues in the industry. And as we progress through to the next session, we might make some small changes. If there are some specific changes that you think we could implement, please let me know.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great
afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Bye.